Al Jazeera Podcasts.
Russia's President Vladimir Putin has been installed for a fifth term, his hold on power firmer than ever. But the war in Ukraine has led to the worst relations with the West since the Cold War. So what will six more years of Putin mean for Russia and the world? I'm Tom McRae and you're listening to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyse and help define major global stories. Okay, let's bring in our guest now from Moscow. Andrei Baklanov is the deputy chairman of the Association of Russian Diplomats and a former Russian diplomat himself. In Côte d'Azur in France, Philip Short is a biographer of Vladimir Putin and a former foreign correspondent. Christopher Weffer is the CEO of Eurasia-focused strategic consulting company Macro Advisory, and he joins us from London. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining us here on Inside Story. Christopher, if I can begin with you. Putin claimed an overwhelming victory in this election, as we saw there. I mean, it was widely condemned by many people as failing to meet the most basic democratic standards. So why hold an election in the first place if we already knew the outcome before a vote was cast?
Well, because well, President Putin, of course, always wants to show that he's got strong public support, that people endorse him. And as you say, of course, the system is such so that no major opposition candidates or parties can actually participate. They're usually excluded. But it's, you know, it's an event every now 6 years where Putin can set out publicly his agenda, can talk about what he's achieved. It's an opportunity every so often for Putin to engage with the people and to get this endorsement, which he's always wanted, despite the fact that, you know, he has this reputation and image of being, you know, aloof and being a strong man, etc. Putin does, you know, care about what the majority of Russian people think about him. And we've seen that in many, many examples over the last 24 years. And so elections are important for him, even though, as you say, the result is never in doubt.
Andrei, what is his agenda? You're in Moscow. Does Putin head into this new term in a stronger or a weaker position than when he started the last one?
I had today a very good opportunity to cover the events because I was monitoring this ceremony, helping our central television. And I saw the reaction of the people inside, and we also picked some immediate reports from our regions. I understood that the expectations are high, that we will go on maintaining good tempo in the field of economy. When Putin took power more than 20 years ago, we had 11th economy in the world. Now, in spite of the fact of the sanctions, this year we are hoping to approach number four, which is just a very good progress. And actually, I think that we gained much. We gained our pride during these years. We had some difficulties. We have some people that are critical to some of the aspects of Putin's policy. For instance, me, myself, I wanted our foreign policy to be much more stern over these the policy of the Western countries. We were reluctant to take energetic measures, sometimes waiting too much. But, well, this is normal. This criticism and but the main trend is positive, and the expectations are mostly positive, and we had more than 87% of the votes for the Putin. It's one of the positive factor.
Philip, I want to go to you next. You've written a biography on Putin. What is it about Vladimir Putin, the man, that has basically seen him hold such control over Russia for such a long time? Is he a fantastic leader? Is he an incredible strategic thinker? What do you put it down to?
I think he's very determined, and he has been extremely clever tactically. He has managed to neutralize those who might oppose him, starting right back with the oligarchs in the early 2000s. He's balanced the different factions in a very intelligent manner, and he has... he's been able to convey messages which have resonated with the Russian people, added to which the economy. I don't take nearly as rose-colored a view as Andre, but the economy has done not too badly. Despite sanctions, it's proved extremely resilient. And if you look at the standard of living of most Russians now compared with 30, 40, 50 years ago, it's a different planet. It really is much better. So all those things have kind of come together to give him a fundamental basis on which to rule. And I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Christopher, if we can just stick with the sanctions, obviously the US and its Western allies was really hoping to put huge amounts of pressure on Putin with these sanctions, some of the most severe we've ever seen. That doesn't appear to have done anywhere near as much damage as the Western allies would have liked. How do you see the economy within Russia at this point in time? And I guess, is that more important to the Russian people than how Russia is perceived outside of the country and the war in Ukraine?
Yeah, sure. As you say, and as Philip mentioned, that the when sanctions were first started, were ratcheted up, I guess after February 22, the narrative in the West was that they would cripple the economy and within 6 months Russia's on his knees, etc. So of course we know that hasn't been the case. Growth last year was 3.6%, and the World Bank, IMF, and others have been upgrading their forecast for this year, expecting again around 3%. Growth. Living conditions in Russia, employment, etc., are all perfectly normal. There's nothing. I mean, I live in central Moscow, and I would say walking out into the shops, etc., it really doesn't feel any different than it did in 2021. Mm-hmm. Everything is available. So the country has been very adaptable. The key issue, of course, was switching from West to East, or the critical factor. So before February 22, Russia's main trading partner was the European Union. It was sending its oil and its gas, earning money from Europe. That stopped. But Russia has been able to divert all of that to Asian markets, principally China, India, and to a lesser extent, the Emirates and Turkey, at a discount, but earning enough money to keep the economy, stable and growing, as we've seen. Now, the issue, of course, is, that's the positives, but there's always two sides to it. The negative, of course, is that a lot of that extra money has gone into the so-called military industrial complex, which is a big driver of growth. Money which is now going into that military industrial complex had previously been earmarked for industrial development, economic expansion, and critically dealing with the deteriorating demographics problems that Russia's facing. That money or those projects have now all been delayed, suspended, because the money's gone into military industrial complex. So you can therefore say that Russia has done very well in the last couple of years, and today looks in good shape, but is facing growing number of problems, and the future is becoming a lot more difficult the longer money goes into military industrial complex and not into the previously planned economic development.
Andre, I'd like to get your response to that, being in Moscow right now. Some analysts have also said that the government could actually take the unpopular step of raising taxes to help pay for the war in Ukraine. What do you make of that?
Well, actually, we must not exaggerate the scope of what's going on in Ukraine. As far as the size of the troops for liberating of Ukraine, we have now 9 times less troops than we had during the Second World War when we were liberating these lands at that period of time. Of course, it's additional transfers of money for the military sector, but the overall danger is very big for us. So I think it was inevitable under this junction for us to raise a little the level of the military expenditure. So Ukraine gave us just additional impetus for this inevitability. That's the situation we are facing. But if you look at everything in Moscow, you will not see any kind of something that would give you the impression that the country is at the war with somebody. No, well, the normal life, everything is quite normal.
Yeah. Philip, how has the war in Ukraine been for Putin? Has it served him well? I mean, obviously, apart from some of the embarrassment after the invasion and the losses early on and the sanctions and losses on the battlefield, at this point in time, more than 2 years since that invasion, has it worked in his favour, do you think?
It certainly, as you say, it didn't work in his favour at the beginning. It was not at all what he expected. He'd been expecting that it would be a short military operation, that Zelensky and the Ukrainian government would flee, that he'd be able to put in someone like Medvedchuk, a pro-Russian Ukrainian, as a pro-Russian government, and it would all be over. And that hasn't happened at all. So it has not worked out at all as he wished. And I think it's important to bear that in mind. Now, he's found himself with a totally different situation where you have a long war, a war of attrition, which he believes he's winning. But, you know, Yogi Berra said making predictions is hard, especially about the future, and especially about wars. It looks like things are going Russia's way at the moment. And, of course, depending on what happens in the United States elections, that could make a huge difference. But there is this uncertainty which is hanging over the whole situation, which he didn't expect when he started it. Now, is he stronger now? He's certainly stronger now than he was a year or so ago when things were not going well. And he does think it's going in his favor. He may well be right, but the jury is out. You know, it's not over till the fat lady sings.
You know, Chris, Western leaders often say that if we don't stop Vladimir Putin in Ukraine, then he's just going to continue to try and overrun other neighboring countries. What do you make of that as an argument put forward by the US and the West?
No, I don't buy that at all. I've been observing Putin since I got to Moscow, which was March 98. Putin had just been appointed head of the FSB. Of course, he more prominently appeared in August the following year, 1999, as prime minister, and then from January 2000 as president. And he's been very consistent. That's not to say that, of course, you know, something can change. But what I can say is over the last 24 years, he's been quite consistent in his statements about how he viewed the West encroaching on Russia's borders, how he viewed the threat to Russia's security, how he did not want to rebuild, you know, the Soviet empire, etc. But his entire narrative has always been on kind of the security of the Western border and about Ukraine in particular. And that's never changed. So there's never been anything in his statements over the last 24 years that would suggest that, you know, his ambition is to take other countries or to expand Russia. It's always been about building a secure Western border in Ukraine against NATO encroachment. And, you know, it could change tomorrow. But all I can say is that for the last 24 years, that's been his narrative and nothing else.
Right. Philip, I can see that you're desperate to jump in there. What do you say to that?
I completely agree with Chris. I think Ukraine is very much a special case. Putin has been exercised about Ukraine ever since the 1990s. You know, he started talking about it when he was already deputy mayor of St. Petersburg. So it is a special thing. And I think he'd have very much to do with his legacy. The decision to go into Ukraine was Putin's decision, much more than a kind of collective decision of the Russian leadership. And he did so, in my view, fundamentally because he wanted to be remembered as the man who'd brought Ukraine back into the Russian fold. Now, attacking NATO countries, he's not crazy. That's not something that he's going to do. And when the West says, oh, if we don't stop him in Ukraine, it's going to be us next, it's a very good propaganda line. It explains to Western taxpayers why they have to spend loads of money supporting the Ukrainians. But it's a propaganda line. It's spin. The reality is it goes to Ukraine. It doesn't go any further.
Right. Andrei, I want to know, from inside Russia, what is the most important thing for Putin over the next 6 years? What is he hoping to achieve in this term?
Well, I think that the majority of the people would like to raise their social and economic standard. This is our main preoccupation. Also, well, of course, we are very much interested what will be in the territory of Ukraine. We made a lot of mistakes there. Me personally, I think that was a very grave mistake of our leadership that we didn't start the war of liberation eight years ago, immediately after the coup d'etat in Kiev. We were waiting and trying to lead this absolutely baseless negotiation process, and the Western countries and the people in Kyiv, they just lied for us. It was a grave mistake. It was necessary to react immediately. But now we are recovering and we are obtaining the necessary experience, and I think that we'll be much more wiser in our policy, and we hope that these mistakes will not be repeated in the years to come, and the positive signs in the economy and in the social sphere will expand. And also, we would like to expand the number of our friends abroad, the so-called majority of the world. It's our potential resource for friendship and reliable relationship.
Okay. Chris, I want to come to you on that point. Obviously, since the war began, we've seen China and Russia forge a much stronger relationship among many other countries. Do you see that continuing? And what else do you think that Putin is going to try and achieve, setting aside the war in Ukraine for a moment, over the next 6 years?
Yeah. And of course, do bear in mind that President Putin will go to Beijing next week, early next week, for talks with President Xi. And we should hear a lot more about maybe plans for the BRICS expansion and what maybe some of the priorities for that joint effort by Beijing and Moscow to expand BRICS. But I think over the next 6 years, you'd ask me what Putin likely to be happy with at the end of 6 years? Well, I think probably three things. One, of course, would be, you know, obviously from his point of view, a successful outcome from the conflict in Ukraine, which for him basically will be about establishing some sort of a safety buffer in Ukraine and maybe realigning some new security arrangement with the West. In other words, Russia is safer. Secondly, he will want people to be happy to vote for him again. He is, of course, entitled to run one more sixth term in 6 years' time. He will, you know, as I mentioned, he has always been very kind of careful about dealing with people, very sensitive to kind of objections, etc. He wants to be seen as a popular leader, a trusted leader, and therefore, you know, ensuring that social conditions and living conditions and incomes, etc., continue to rise and people don't face hardship. That will be a key priority for the next 6 years. And I think the third one then is, obviously, is BRICS. It's strengthening and broadening that kind of multipolar world, if you like, with BRICS being a big part of it. It's kind of breaking what he has always regarded as being the hegemony of the West. So I think those obviously security, people, and then this kind of new global order, those are the three priorities.
Philip, what kind of future do you think that Putin sees for himself? Is he going to try and continue as president until the day he dies, or do you think that he is going to be happy to put his feet up at some point in time and look back on his legacy?
I was going to pick Chris up, actually, on saying, well, you know, he's got one more term, and in 6 years' time, he'll have another election, because I'm not sure he will. It depends. To me, it all depends on what happens in Ukraine. If you can have a truce, a stable situation, I won't say a peace agreement, because that seems really too difficult, but a stabilization of the situation in Ukraine where Russia can declare victory, then I think Putin's immediate next thought is going to be the transition, how he withdraws, who is going to succeed him, what kind of role he will play. Will he play a role from behind the scenes, you know, continuing to manipulate, or so on? But I do not believe that he wants to go on until he's carted out in a coffin from being still in office. He wants to leave at some point. And he's been very consistent about this over the years. He's talked about the difficulties of the succession. It's been always in his mind.
Mm. Andre, is there a natural successor there? What if Putin wants to become ill?
Well, the succession plan of Putin is very specific. He's thinking not on the personal level. He's thinking about the stability of the certain tendencies of social, economic, political, external, and other directions of our development. He's not thinking on the level who precisely what personality would be after him. He's thinking about the the stability of the experience which we gained during these years, and the necessity to go on with the positive aspects of our policy. This is very solid and very serious attitude of Mr. Putin for the continuation of the line he established.
Yeah, Chris, I can see you're desperate to jump in there. Do you think that stability of Russia is Putin's number one priority?
Stability, absolutely. I remember listening to a minister several years ago, well before February 22. He started off his speech saying, you know, the best thing about Russia is stability, and then quickly added, then the worst thing about Russia is stability. Mm. But we've heard that from President Putin over the last 20 years. He does really like a stability. But I just want to, you know, quickly wheel back, Philip. Yeah, just to clarify, I actually also agree that President Putin does not want to stay until he's carried out in a box. And we were very well aware of that several years ago. It looked like that there was actually a lot more, you know, taking place in terms of succession planning and talking about succession. And it became known that Putin was becoming bored with the formalities of president. He didn't want to have to turn up, you know, every other week and shake hands with visiting dignitaries and stand in front of, you know, the crowds, etc. It seemed like he was getting bored with that. So we were talking a lot more about succession several years ago. And exactly as Philip said, Putin looking for some role where he could perhaps be in the background, obviously having a very influential and strong voice on strategic issues, on military and geopolitics, but no longer doing the day-to-day job of president. But to clarify the question in terms of tomorrow, if Putin were to suddenly drop dead tomorrow, then under the constitution, the prime minister would be automatically president for a maximum period of 3 months. Then there would have to be an election. What we have always considered is that if Putin does leave, it will have to be somebody that's acceptable to all the various groups. Remember, you've got very powerful groups, you know, within to form their regime, security forces, etc. So somebody that would be acceptable to all those groups who would not cause kind of instability, go back to that word. Okay. A person to keep an eye on is Alexei Duman, currently the governor of Tula. If we do get government changes in the next couple of weeks, some of which we will for sure, it will be very interesting to watch, does his position change and to what? But that he is somebody that we had previously had looked at very closely as being something of a protege. Okay. So keep an eye on him.
We'll have to leave it there, but we really do appreciate your input and your insight. Thanks so much, Andre, Philip, and Chris. We really do appreciate it. Thank you. This episode was produced by Dermot Fleming, Alexandra Byers, Ben Clark and Paul Taylor. Studio sound was by Haseeb Hashmi. The program was edited by Romel Ascension, Zainab Bada and Joe DeFrias. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch each and every episode. Thank you very much for listening. Tune in on Wednesday for our next edition.
Coming up on The Take, Israel orders Palestinians to evacuate eastern Rafah ahead of an expected ground invasion. So, why hasn't a ceasefire been reached? That's The Take by Al Jazeera. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.